Stephen Huff playing Somewhere a Voice is Calling Sunday Morning with Susie Klein came live from the foyer of the Queen Elizabeth Hall in London, and the producer was Lyndon Jones. It was a perfectly normal production for BBC Radio 3.
Here begins the downfall of the gods. Radio 3, live in concert, brings you the first opera in Opera North's pioneering new ring cycle. A four-year project beginning with one of the most challenging opera scores in the canon, and a cast coached by a celebrated Brunhilde, Dame Anne Evans. Das Rheingold, live from Leeds. Radio 3, live in concert, Friday night at 7:30.
And now, Private Passions with Michael Barclay.
Private Passions is tripping the light fantastic this week as part of Radio 3's celebration of light music. And to that end, today I've chosen highlights from the voluminous Private Passions archive, revisiting guests who've chosen music on the lighter end of the spectrum. The focus of this weekend has been very much on British light music, but my guests over the years have chosen music from across the globe, ranging from popular classics to, well, actually the downright peculiar. And to that end, we offer you no less than housewife superstar Dame Edna Everidge, the creator of Rumpel, the late John Mortimer, the Private Eye cartoonist Barry Fantoni, the absolutely fabulous Joanna Lumley, playwright Mark Ravenhill, and to begin, none other than Stephen Fry. Now, I have to say that over more than 15 years and some 800 editions of Private Passions, the predominant emotion, the predominant passion, has been for profoundly moving works, music of romantic, tragedy, serious and melancholy. But there has been the odd guest who simply loved music that is fun, amusing, jolly, and dare I say it, that even has a certain beguiling naffness.
I'm afraid it's true. And you don't get more naff or less cool than my next choice, I'm afraid. It was one of those MFPs, Music for Pleasure, albums that was very glossy and would usually be in a strangely sort of vinyl-coated wire record carrier. You know, the kind of G-Plan thing where there were little sort of like strings, virtually. You could twang them and you'd fit your record in. And you could be sure that amongst that collection in its Schreiber G-Plan record holder would be something by Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass. But they are brilliant, and I will stand firm on the fact that these are beautifully arranged and marvellously conceived pieces of music and very well finished. And
Crisp brass playing.
Yeah, very crisp brass playing on that sort of mariachi trumpet that is the sort of signature sound of Tijuana. And, of course, now they are rather cool. There's a film, I'm not sure if it's a Tarantino film, it's a rather violent film, which uses this very piece of music as an introduction to some heavy, knuckle-into-jaw grinding actions.
Thank you.
We were both howling with laughter.
I suppose it's the unredeemably cheerful nature of it.
And how on earth, why is that called a walk in the Black Forest? He was been to the Black Forest. I can't mean, there's nothing black or foresty about that music at all.
Or even cake-like.
Absolutely. It's a skip to the ice cream van, if anything.
Herb Alpert and his Tijuana Brass with A Walk in the Black Forest, a walk that had Stephen Fry rolling around the floor in stitches. Well, my next guest is also nationally treasured, but from Australia. She's perhaps the best loved and most inspiring of modern women, equally at home with royalty as us ordinary everyday folk. When she came to the studio, I remember I complimented her on her fine choice of clothes, and she said, "Michael, I can tell how much you appreciate it by the way your hand is slowly travelling up my thigh."
The next choice for me on Private Passions, and this is Damien Reverend sharing with you on this wonderful time of the year, my next choice is a beautiful song sung by John McCormack. Now, there would be a generation or two who would not know of John McCormack, but in his way, he was the tenor of his age. Originally Irish, if I'm not mistaken, and he sang a lovely repertoire. But this song is by an Australian, and it's called Bless This House. Now, a lot of our listeners will say, Bless This House by an Australian. Yes. Bless This House was written by a woman called May Bra, and by a spooky coincidence, my second name is May, Edna May Everidge. A lot of the lyrics for her songs were written by her sister, whose name was Madge. Isn't that spooky?
Ah, familiar.
Madge Dickinson wrote the lyrics, and Bless This House is her most famous song. Now, because she was a housewife composer, a lot of the feminists in the 70s rejected her, you know? I mean, it gave a new dimension to the expression, burning your bra. Though her name was Bra, again, a funny name, isn't it, for a woman? Well, in a way, rather a suitable name for a woman.
Absolutely. And this recording, I think we should say, was made in 1932. So back to your grandparents now, Damien.
Well, it is getting on, certainly long before I was a sparkle in my father's eye. So we're going to listen to a beautiful song by a great and all too neglected Australian woman composer. Bless This House, exquisitely sung by John McCormack.
Yeah.
Wasn't that delightful? Bless this house by the Melbourne composer May Brah. And sung, of course, by the inimitable John McCormack. Recorded in 1932, a few little crackles, but nothing that could spoil that beautiful ditty for me. And notice how May Brah and her lyricist Madge, her sister, went through pretty well everything that is in a house. The windows, the fireplace. Of course, they didn't mention the fridge, did they? Or the CD player, because they weren't invented then. But it would have been, of necessity, a longer song had it been written in the 90s. It's still, I think, a beautiful number and deserves to be heard a lot more. And I'm hoping, listeners, that this programme is going to give an airing to songs which you are thereafter going to request and will be heard a lot more. You just have to ring up and say, I want Dame Edna's favourites, please. And you'll find that the BBC will be only too happy to oblige.
And I'm quite sure that the BBC switchboard is poised to help all of us fans of the one and only Dame Edna Everage. We heard John McCormack with Edwin Schneider playing the piano in Bless This House by May Brah. Perhaps we'll hear more from Dame Edna later. Ever since I was a schoolboy and acted in a production of The Doc Brief, I've loved the human and perceptive wit of the writer and barrister, the late John Mortimer. So I really couldn't envisage an edition of Private Passions dedicated to light music without a reminder of my visit to John's home in the Chilterns. There we discussed his love of opera, both profound and effervescent, and indeed his one professional involvement with it.
Well, this was the highlight of my operatic career, and I was asked to translate Fledermaus at Covent Garden. They used to do it at Covent Garden in a sort of mélange of different languages, and I was asked to do it, and I was very, very keen on doing it. And it was, I think, the most difficult thing I've ever done in my life, because you can think of a joke, you know, and then you try and fit it into the music. That's one thing. And then you try and fit it in the stresses of the German words, which are already there. And then you have to have open vowels for high notes. And by the time you've got all that right, you know, the joke's looking a bit pale. And we were talking about funny music, and I think Fledermaus has got funny music in it. I mean, the characters in Fledermaus are like the characters in Phaedo farces. They're totally selfish, and they've got no feelings except their own satisfaction. But they pretend sometimes to have emotions. And this number in the first act, what has happened is that Eisenstein, they're all very bourgeois, and Eisenstein, the bourgeois husband, is being taken off to prison. In fact, he's in evening dress because he's secretly going to a party before he gets to prison. And his wife has got a couple of admirers on the side, and the maid Adela has got a boyfriend, and she's lied about where she's going for the evening. And so Eisenstein leaves for prison, and this is a trio in which they pretend to be incredibly sad about it, but cheerfulness keeps breaking in, so the music becomes very funny. They do a funny little dance, and then they pretend to be frightfully sad again.
It is, oh dear, how sad it is.
How sad it is, from Johann Strauss's Die Fledermaus, in the English translation by my private passion's guest, John Mortimer. We heard Judith Howarth, Louis Oti, Nancy Gustafson, and the orchestra of the Royal Opera House, Covent Garden, conducted by Richard Bonning. Not surprisingly, the music that surrounds us as children, the music our parents played and sang, influences and moulds our musical tastes. And so sometimes even someone from the cutting edge of contemporary art will have a really soft spot for the light classics. And this was precisely the case with the playwright Mark Ravenhill and his childhood.
Yeah, when I was a child, we had quite a lot of old LPs. And my parents liked popular classics. They liked Viennese waltzes and they liked Gilbert and Sullivan. And I think the piece that has stuck most in my mind, I don't know why, but it's just the piece I enjoyed the most singing along with, really, was Offenbach, Orpheus in the Underworld. And there's a fantastic duet between Orpheus and Eurydice. And I think classically in the story, he's supposed to be a wonderful musician. He charms all the animals. He's a fantastic player. But in Offenbach, he's kind of reversed the thing. So he's a terrible musician and his wife can't stand the sound of his playing.
You're gone too far.
How right you are.
We'd be better if we were free.
Yes, I agree. I quite agree.
And as an artist, do you hate me?
I do indeed, if you must know.
But as a violinist, how do you rate me?
Extremely low. Your wretched bow is always scraping my grating, grating. There's no escaping the ghastly din. Your tone is thin, lighting, clinking. I simply loathe the violin.
That rude and I resent it. And I'll make you repent it.
Very well, just begin. I dare you to do it.
My angel, wait, I pray you, for this
adore. I'm just about to play you my concerto opus 4.
Spini, really, I can't sit through it.
It's such a brilliant score, and never played before. It lasts 2 hours or more.
No, I can bear it, 2 hours or more.
2 hours or more, not counting the encore.
What am I to do?
A longer dance or two.
I'll hate it if it's true.
And you must hear it too.
No, 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 no. Spare me. Spare me.
Fascinating, insinuating, and what a thrill to him I thrill. Ah, ah,
ah, ah,
ah. It's captivating, it's scintillating, such a bit was never known. Ah, 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 ah.
So very shrill, it makes me ill.
And what a thrill to hear my thrill.
That dreadful drone is like a groan.
And when I play cantabile.
How intense my prose.
I mean, they can really play comedy. It's June Bromhill and Kevin Miller. And so often in the opera house, you see people straining to be funny, but those two actually are genuinely lightly comic singers, and it's great.
Kevin Miller was Orpheus and June Bromhill, Eurydice, with the Sadler's Wells Orchestra conducted by Alexander Farris. You've Gone Too Far from Orpheus in the Underworld by Offenbach, the choice, perhaps surprisingly, of my guest, Mark Ravenhill. Now, the great advantage of having a guest like Dame Edna Everidge on Private Passions is that a searching intellectual curiosity is brought to bear on the choice of music. Even my most distinguished guests often choose music from a fairly narrow range.
Hackneyed is the word. Hackneyed pieces. Really, I do advise you, steer clear of these old duffers who play things people have heard to death. This is a neglected British classic, orchestral. Not much crackling in the background, listeners. A more recent recording. It's by Charles Williams. Now, does that name conjure up anything? A British composer, we think of Vaughan Williams, but Charles Williams has sunk into a bit of obscurity. He was better known, perhaps, as a conductor. Charles Williams Orchestra, and we're going to listen to his concert orchestra on this record, and he's playing a thing called The Dream of Olwen. Now, The Dream of Olwen, I think, put Britain in the forefront of classical music in that pretty barren period we had, of course, William Walton and those composers. But Charles Williams, in my opinion, was miles ahead of them. It was music composed for a film, and the date is 1947, and the tune of The Dream of Olwen, the beautiful symphony, which we're going to listen to in its entirety, ran 38 weeks in the charts, which is a long time in those days, and it sold 250,000 copies. So it was a very, very major chart buster of its time for a classical piece. In many ways, inaccessible and difficult. And we're going to listen to The Dream of Olwen now with Arthur Dulay. Arthur, if you're listening, if you're with us, thank you. Arthur Dulay on the piano and Charles Williams conducting his own composition. We don't know anything about Olwen, but I think a lot of children were named Olwen. If you know someone called Olwen, they're probably named after this beautiful piece of music. over Rachmaninoff. Yes, not Rachmaninoff, music buffs, I'm sorry. No, that was our very own Charles Williams, with his own composition, The Dream of Alwyn, the big smash classical hit of 1947, and well worth listening to again, brought back lots and lots of lovely memories.
As played by, well, I was keen to say Arthur Daly, but Arthur Dooley with Charles Williams and his orchestra. Another selection that was from Dame Edna. And I don't suppose that's the last of her. We'll see. Next, Barry Fantoni, the writer and cartoonist, a regular contributor to Private Eye. He chose, among other things, the lovely piece by Samuel Barber called Knoxville, Summer of 1915, and also an inspiring offering by his great friend Spike Milligan.
Yes, and of course, I mean, Spike would ring up on a regular basis and say, hello, it's Spike here. The BBC have let me down again. And then we got a long rant about how the BBC had let him down. And I do have a great admiration, as I did for Peter, for being really one of those wagoners who went out west just on their own with a spade and nothing else to guide them. And they just ploughed their own furrow and all the other analogies that go with that. They didn't listen to anybody else, didn't care about anybody else. They just did what they were good at. And Spike, you know, lived much longer than Peter, and all his life he just carried on being funny in that particular way. And why I like that Samuel Barber piece is because of the way that Barber scored and put a setting under a very unlikely piece of prose. In the next piece, what could be more absurd than a list of items which are invented that are being auctioned? And I must confess that I have a weakness for lists and also a weakness for things that people leave behind them when they die. I like car boot sales, I like junk shops, I like auctions, I like anywhere where the detritus of a person's life has been left. And there is a way that you can tell quite a lot about people from what they leave behind, what they've chosen to take with them on their journey. And in this ridiculous auction that Spike's supposedly conducting, there are things like uncle frighteners and all other kinds of mad inventions. And underneath this absolutely glorious piece of scoring. Ravel could have written it. It's that good.
Charles to Mrs. Elena Kratt for 2 guineas. Lot number 4.
One mahogany bedside cabinet with flowered porcelain nature receptacle. One folk loom twill and leash antimacassar. One Hepplewhite telescope tripod with a tarnished brass securing screw. One imitable Martian martyrum. One imitation marble washstand with purification dish and fish attachment. One anti-burglar self-preservator head bludgeon, sand-filled and hand-sewn brown leather. 2 cleverly and quandric hand-operated brown oak candle holders with additional string. 1 stuffed Galapagos giant turtle on wheels with clockwork revolving eyes. 2 bottles of imitation wax fruit. 1 banana, ruefully chipped, once the property of the late Lord Frederick Crapton Lee of Monmouth. 1 brown... with extra string. 1 brown leather and maquette fireside chair. 1 engraved Capocfield Arctic tea cozy with additional string and computer. 1 brass iron-bound bedstead with spring head manipulator and foot-operated mallet. A similar lot. 7.5 pairs of brown damask curtains with foam rubber lining, well known in Belgravia. 1 cut glass Delft claret decanter with extra string. 1 brass and metal 3'6" bedstead with hair-cord anti-tick mattress and sundry attachments. A similar lot. Another lot. One collection of high-altitude eagle studies. Two volumes on how to wean vultures. One volume on how to leave vultures alone. Collection of unknotted string in hand-twined balls, and vice versa, whichever be greater to the power of 10. 14 man-mounted ivory monkeys cut from single wrought iron elephant tusk and signed Jim Yakamoto of Leeds. One kiln-fired clay hairy Alsatian answering to the name of Tom, Dick, or Harry, and in that order. One Sheridan stirrup cup in squatted bronze and mead lux, the property of the corn hunt, and a similar lot. One box of brown haircord buttons, each containing two or four perforations. A similar lot. One early X-ray photo of Florence Nightingale's teeth facing east. Extra string in abundance. One child's hangman's kit once used. Two heavy brown boxes on brass stilts. One polished monogram brass bound box containing three pairs of domestic knee protectors. One throat mallet. One small brown pot containing another small brown pot. One iron bound Uncle Frightener in 3 foot length. One auntie disintegrator in matted hair cord. One pair of anonymous fruit bowls where the plant is.
They are wonderful.
It's a Victorian Edwardian musty world, completely cut. And also George Martin wrote that orchestration.
And I love the propensity for string.
and plenty of it. Mm. There's no shortage of string in it.
Another Lot by Spike Milligan, chosen by Barry Fantoni. Personally, I would definitely have bid on the Brown Uncle Frightener. Like Mark Ravenhill, the actress Joanna Lumley recalled a particular piece she encountered when still very young.
I fell in love with this, Michael, because I was given the record when I was about 12, and it completely struck me at a time. I'd just had my appendix out, and I was therefore very open to... I felt very alive. Not that I was in danger, but, I mean, I felt... it was the first time I'd had hard, heavy drugs, the first time I'd been cut, the first time I'd been in hospital. When I came back, there was this beautiful record... I've always loved choral singing, and boys' voices seem as artless and as beautiful as anything. It doesn't mean to say I'm against girls' choirs, but boys kind of, you know. And to hear this, and it's got such a feeling of Vienna. I loved this piece, the Sphärenklänge, which you're going to help me, I think means the kind of music of the planets, really.
The spheres.
Spheres, isn't it? The Klänge, what, the ringing of the spheres. Mm. Joseph Strauss doesn't seem to repeat himself once. He just goes from what you'd think, if you'd done it, would have been the best fabulous tune, and he just rolls straight onto another like a snowflake. He doesn't care. He just rolls on and on effortlessly. And to have this just transcribed for boys' voices and piano is terribly modest, but at the same time, soaringly exciting.
Thank you.
the Vienna Boys Choir, directed by Friedrich Brenn in Josef Strauss's Sphärenklänge, the choice of my Private Passions guest, Joanna Lumley. Now, you might have thought from her previous choices that Dame Edna Everage's appreciation of music, well, it might just lack that very last ounce of sophistication, and that her ear might resist the most challenging and difficult of advanced music. Did you? Really?
Do you know, I even appreciate very difficult music, Michael. People say, oh, Edna, you're a bit middle of the road. And perhaps in a way I am. But in the 50s, I spotted very, very early on a Russian, very upmarket, very inaccessible composer called Khachaturian. I don't know if you've heard of him.
I think it rings a bell.
Khachaturian was his name. I don't know if he had another name. I think those people just have one name. Khachaturian. And he wrote a piece which thereafter, every version you can think of was made of it, orchestral. But very rarely is the original ever heard of this famous piece. And it's my privilege, Michael, and listeners on Private Passions, this is Dame Edna, by the way, in case foolishly you've just tuned in, it's my privilege now to introduce from a very rare broadcast Khachaturian's original piece. Listen to this.
The Andrews Sisters with their famous saber dance.
My heart begins to tingle when the bells begin to jingle. Ziggity zing zing, ziggity zing zing. Every time they play the saber dance, my heartbeat tries to capture all the rhythm and the rapture. Ziggity zing zing, ziggity zing zing. Every time they play the saber dance. I love the spell I'm under when the drums begin to thunder. Boomity boom boom, boomity boom boom. Like the tempo of a tropic rain. When I hear trumpets blaring, I can feel adventure flaring. Ready-de-de-de-de-de, ready-de-de-de-de-de. I am in a mood I can't explain. I drift to an isle of perfume where summer roses eternally bloom. Golden gleam waits my one wonderful dream. Music, take me, don't forsake me. Let me be a ship lost at sea that the winds rock and roar. Whirling, swirling, twirling, out of control. That music drives me crazy, everything becomes so hazy. Drums are booming, cellos zooming, cymbals crashing, sabers flashing in a willy-nilly sort of way. I seem to hear it night and day, blending in romantic fashion, melody, moonlight, and passion. Riding high in heaven's highway, purple stars are guiding my way. I am like a comet whizzing by. Just when I get the feeling that the universe is really, suddenly the song is ending, and I find that I'm descending like a star that's falling from the sky. Doubling, twisting, tumbling, and down and down and down and down and round and round and round and round and down and down and down and down, and I begin to spin into a trance. Every time they play that same return.
How wonderful and historic to have heard Khachaturian's original saber dance with the words, which are sadly so often overlooked and forgotten.
And listening to that, two things occurred to me, which I'm very grateful to you for. I suddenly realised, given the presence of such an extraordinary composing genius, why his colleague Shostakovich must have so often looked depressed.
Well, yes, he was a very, I believe, I didn't meet him, but he was a very gloomy-looking person, probably because of his glasses, so thick he could barely see anything, like looking through the bottom of milk bottles.
And he never wrote anything like that, of course.
No, nothing. And I didn't have the command of the lyric, as Khachaturian did. That was interesting, and hearing the Andrews Sisters too, who I used to love. Khachaturian's Saber Dance was one of the big hits of the 50s, and to me is indelibly associated with that age. And I think old Khachaturian's saber meant a lot to the women of that age as he waved it around. I'd like to have met him.
And I'm quite sure the feeling would have been entirely mutual. Dame Edna catching a Turian and, with the help of the Andrews Sisters, sabering his saber. Al Murray, the comedian best known for his xenophobic character, the stereotypical pub landlord, revealed on Private Passions his much more serious side, his love of German history, for example. And he traced one of his private passions back to childhood, one of those pieces which I think evokes nostalgic memories for many of us. Murray came across it while researching a particular television series.
Yes, well, I made a programme several years ago about the last year of the Second World War, which was called Road to Berlin, where we travelled from the beaches of Normandy to Berlin via the sort of main scenes of drama and pivotal points. And I very much have grown up fascinated by the Second World War as the sort of the event that's landed us largely where we are now. And this piece of music is, well, the Dam Busters March. A friend of mine used to joke, a chap Richard Thomas, who wrote Jerry Springer, the opera, he always used to joke that classical composers had been born 100 years before movies, and so they'd been thwarted in their aims and ambitions. And Coates obviously doesn't fall into that category. And this is a piece of music that, again, my childhood was about a lot of music and a lot of sort of classic films, and the Dam Busters falls very much squarely into this. And it's essentially, as a historic film goes, it's pretty accurate. The story is accurately told. And this music is so evocative. I think the pub landlord would know this, though he probably wouldn't know quite where from.
Thank you. Dam Buster's March by Eric Coates, chosen by the comedian Al Murray. The BBC Concert Orchestra was conducted by Sir Adrian Bolt. And the Light Touch continues on Private Passions next week, when Michael Barclay's guest will be another comedian, Alex Horn. Private Passions is a classic arts production for Radio 3. Today's edition was produced by Chris Marshall.
The Guildhall and the Assembly Rooms. They both resounded to the playing of some of the UK's finest chamber musicians at the 2011 Bach International Music Fest. The Radio 3 Lunchtime Concert brings you four of the best concerts from this year's festival, featuring Natalie Klein, a piano duo, and the Tokyo, Heath and Navarra Quartets. The Radio 3 Lunchtime Concert from the Bath Festival, Tuesday to Friday this week at 1 o'clock, and online whenever you choose from the Radio 3 homepage.
You're listening to Radio 3's Light Fantastic Weekend. We're off to Scarborough in just a moment as Britain's last professional seaside light orchestra celebrates its 99th year. First of all, at 1 o'clock, the BBC News from David Cornick.
The Education Secretary, Michael Gove, has warned teachers that their planned strike on Thursday will be a retrograde step for their profession and will damage their reputation. Thousands of schools in England and Wales could close because of action by two teaching unions over changes to pensions. Mr Gove said the action would increase public support for tougher union laws. The Chinese Prime Minister Wen Jiabao has begun a three-day trip to Britain to promote trade links. He's been to Stratford-upon-Avon, followed by a visit to the Chinese-owned MG Rover plant near Birmingham, where human rights groups chanted slogans to criticise China's human rights record. One of China's most prominent human rights activists, Hu Jia, has been released from prison after serving 3.5 years on subversion charges. His release comes just days after another prominent activist, the artist Ai Weiwei, was released from police custody. Hundreds of relatives of Egyptians who were killed or injured in the protests that toppled President Mubarak have clashed with police outside the court where the former interior minister is on trial. Habib al-Adli's trial was adjourned until next month. Crime maps, which allow the public in England and Wales to see information about the level of crime in their local area, could soon include photographs of offenders. The idea, put forward by the Home Office, is being trialled in West Yorkshire. A senior Conservative in David Cameron's constituency has been found dead at the Glastonbury Festival. The body of Christopher Shale, who was chairman of the West Oxfordshire Conservative Association, was discovered in a toilet in a backstage area not open to the public. People who applied for tickets to the London 2012 Olympics in the second ballot will begin hearing today whether they've been successful. 2.3 million tickets were made available on Friday for those who unsuccessfully tried to buy tickets in the first round of sales. And the weather, dry, hot and sunny for much of England and Wales, cloudy with showers for Scotland and Northern Ireland. BBC News and weather at 1:02.
Light Fantastic on BBC Radio 3. Petroc Trelawney with you. And after enjoying the sunshine of the South Bank in London this morning, I'm pulling up a deck chair here at Broadcasting House to introduce a wonderful afternoon of light music from seaside and city. The BBC National Orchestra of Wales playing your requests live in Cardiff at 2. John Wilson Orchestra Tea Dance, direct from the Claw Ballroom of the Royal Festival Hall at 5, we've cinema organs in Blackpool and Worthing in just over 40 minutes' time. The choir, even a special light music edition of Choral Evensong from the Queen's Chapel of the Savoy in London at 4 o'clock. First of all, the conductor Matthew Rowe travels to the Yorkshire coast to trace a musical survival story in The Last Seaside Orchestra.
There was a time when classical music was as much a part of a British seaside holiday as paddling on the beach, donkey rides, and strolling on the promenade. Every major resort around the country had its own professional orchestra giving concerts during the summer season, and many famous British conductors, including Malcolm Sargent, served their time with them. Now, there's just one left. The Scarborough Spa Orchestra, based in a magnificent Victorian building overlooking the town's South Bay. And they're still drawing the crowds after 99 years. Why is this such a success story when the other seaside orchestras have faded away? What's their secret? What better way to find out than to spend a day with the orchestra at the start of their summer season?
It's just so different. There's nowhere else in the country where I know you can get an outdoor concert of this quality. And with a sea view. Just super. Love Scarborough.
I say the spa is absolutely synonymous with Scarborough. You know, whoever you talk to, wherever you go, and you mention Scarborough, they all mention the spa. And they all must come to listen to the orchestra. And that, and you can have a cup of tea, you can have a bacon sandwich, enjoy yourself. That's what it's all about.
It's like Victorian, isn't it? It's going back. It's not modern and trashy. It's genteel and it's lovely.
Well, here we are on the coast in Scarborough on this glorious early summer morning, gentle breeze, waves lapping on the seawall below, and behind me the glorious Victorian sandstone building of the Scarborough Spa, and in front of me I can see what I think is probably the famous Sun Court with its little domed bandstand and white columns. So looking forward to getting inside there and seeing what it's like. That must be one of the players there in their wonderful striped jackets of red, black and white. Looks like they've just perhaps come from a regatta. Oh, I think it's a percussionist by the looks of his music folder. Can I say good morning? My name is Matthew Rowe. I think you must be a member of the Scarborough Spa Orchestra.
You don't think I dress like this for fun, do you?
Wonderful. And we're just concert shortly this morning.
Yeah, 11 o'clock. Yeah, nice day for it. It's always wonderful. Great when the sun's out. It's not so much fun on the northeast coast when the sun's not shining because we get that nasty wind. But it's lovely. When the sun's out, it's unique. It's lovely in there.
Marvellous. And I was very rude. I was very rude not to ask your name at the beginning.
Oh, my name's Lee. Lee Adams. I've been here for about 9 years now. I think this is my ninth season.
Wonderful. And you've got a shaker there, a whistle.
Yeah.
One other.
Right. Well, this is a whistle.
Another noise-making device.
This is my ratchet. This is for the fairy, the clockwork fairy. Hang on. That's the clockwork fairy being wound up. And this is my shaker for my holiday in Cuba.
So, well, it looks like you're all set. I think I better get in and take my seat.
Yeah, do so. Enjoy the concert.
I will do. Thank you, Lee.
Bye-bye.
So walking into the Sun Court here, open-air seating for the audience, many of them in deck chairs, sitting on top of a chessboard-like black and white tiled floor. And then to my left is the stage, which is a bandstand, which is covered with a little domed roof. And then either side there's a sort of line of white columns which are linked together with huge glass windows which give an almost uninterrupted view of the sea and the wonderful South Bay. A few members of the orchestra gathering on the platform. I can see four there, and I think violinist has just arrived, and I think I can see the music director, Paul Laidlaw, up there too.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Music in the Air.
when we're in Scarborough, we come and see them. We got fond memories because I used to bring my mother, and she used to love to come and sit, and she's no longer with us now. But we think of Mum when we come here, because it was a favourite place in Scarborough.
We only live down the coast in Filey, but they are so good, so professional. And I mean, it may be a little bit old-fashioned for many people, but actually, it's